Life Audio.
Welcome to Christian Natural Health with naturopathic Dr. Lauren DeVille. Christian Natural Health is the podcast on how to get and stay healthy, God's way. You'll hear topics on nutrition, exercise, sleep, avoiding toxicity, meditating on scripture, what supplements to take, stress management, defeating anxiety and worry, how to reconcile Eastern medicine approaches with Christianity, and a whole lot more. Now, here's your host, Dr. Lauren.
Hi, everyone. If you've been injured in an accident that was not your fault, listen up. We have legal professionals standing by to answer your questions for free. Call now and find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth. Call 800-497-4410. I'm here with spokesman John Wolf. So, John, tell everyone listening who should call right now.
Well, Maria, first off, thank you for having me here. It's always nice to answer the listeners' questions. Now, as far as who should call in, anyone who's been injured in an accident and think you deserve compensation, give us a call right now. 800-497-4410. You'll find out if you have a case and how much it's potentially worth.
Thanks, John. You heard it, folks. Take advantage of this opportunity and call now. 800-497-4410.
Advertisement sponsored by Legal Help Center may not be available in all states.
Welcome back to another episode of Christian Natural Health. Today, I'm excited to have Dr. Russell Witte. Dr. Witte is a professor of medical imaging, optical sciences, and biomedical engineering at the University of Arizona. Dr. Witte's experimental ultrasound and neural imaging laboratory devises cutting-edge imaging technology, integrating light, ultrasound, and microwaves to diagnose and treat diseases ranging from tendinopathies and arrhythmias to breast cancer. By integrating different forms of energy, special effects are created that enable ultrasound imaging of optical absorption deep in tissue, mapping current source densities in the beating heart and elasticity imaging of human muscle and tendon for quantifying tissue mechanical properties. Dr. Witte's research further extends into nanotechnology and smart contrast agents, which have applications to functional brain imaging, cardiovascular disease, and cancer. Dr. Witte works closely with collaborators in the colleges of engineering, optical sciences, and medicine, as well as industry, to develop cutting-edge imaging technologies that potentially improve patient care. Welcome, Dr. Witte. Thanks for joining us.
Good to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, absolutely. So today we're going to talk about something that's sort of like tangential to most of your studies in 5G. So first of all, can you define what 5G is for our audience?
So 5G is actually an industry created term. It stands for fifth generation technology. Okay. So 1G would be your analog phone directly connected, the old analog phone wired. 2G would be where you just had texting in the very early 1990s. When you added internet to that, it was third generation. 3G, 4G is when you introduced the video. So 5G now is adding when you start connecting things to other devices. Okay, so it's not just the phone. In fact, the phone might be the least part of what 5G is. It's about connecting everything and everybody to a grid. And that's what really fifth generation is about. And it's kind of a moving target. Technically, 5G, most people would agree, is a microwave frequencies that are above 3.5 gigahertz.
Okay.
And 4G would be considered things below 3.5 gigahertz, but all within the microwave spectrum. So that's 0.3 gigahertz. To 300 gigahertz. That entire spectrum is considered microwave radiation, which is what we're going to talk about today. Mm-hmm. And that whole band works together as we go from 5G. It integrates with 4G. It's not replacing one. It's being added to it. And then there are things like 6G and 7G as you start connecting more devices and add software applications and AI. It gets more advanced from there. So it's really a much bigger thing than just having two letters to understand what this is about.
Right, right. Okay. So for 4G and 5G, it sounds like the frequencies do increase, though, as the generations go on, or not necessarily?
That's correct in terms of adding more frequencies, because the higher the frequencies, the more frequencies you add, the higher the bandwidth. The more bandwidth means more information transfer, and the faster you can transfer information. So to have the Internet of Things, whatever that is, or Internet of Bodies, and connecting everything, you need a large amount of information transferred in a relatively short amount of time, which simply means more frequencies and higher frequencies.
Gotcha. Okay. And so a lot of people toss around this idea of Internet of Things. Is this like Alexa, smart TVs? What all is included in the Internet of Things?
So the Internet of Things is really about connecting everything to a grid. Okay, so it's 24/7 monitoring of everything, essentially. Everything down to nanoscale to macro scale. There's a term Internet of Bodies, which are all the things that you might put on your body that sends wireless transmission that connects to the grid, ultimately to a hospital and your doctor. And there are platforms already established to do this.
Oh my.
And so that's kind of, even though IoT is kind of a fancy little acronym or Internet of Things, it's really important we understand the bigger picture of what this is about so we
Right.
can decide what part of this we really want and what part of it we should be regulating or possibly rejecting.
Right. Okay. So, from a health standpoint, is there a difference in terms of how concerned we should be for the 3G, 4G, 5G? And I hadn't even heard of 7G. I thought 6G was coming. But as far as what that actually does to our bodies, is there just an increased saturation in our environments, or does the amount of energy that these bandwidths are carrying make a difference in terms of potential health consequences?
So I think we just need to step back and understand the type of energy this is. So it's pulse modulated microwave radiation. So everything in this band that we use, and this is our wireless devices that we use every day, and it's the things being added with the cell towers, the 5G cell towers, and actually almost anything now can get an antenna on it, a lot of the poles, and you know, so it's it, so some of these are more symbolic, but they're all transmitting microwave radiation. And a lot of people don't realize how much research over the last over 100 years since before World War II, people have investigated through research and through their own experience, relatively low level microwave radiation and the effects on the body and biological systems. In fact, in my opinion, there is no environmental factor that's been more thoroughly studied than the
Really?
effects of microwaves on living systems. There are over 20,000 relevant peer-reviewed and publications and government studies in this area. So as soon as we sit down to have a conversation or a debate that, like they used to, in fact, there's a book in 1984 called The Great Microwave Debate, where people actually debated these topics.
Wow.
I think people would learn very quickly that this type of radiation is certainly not safe, and I would say it's not even inconclusive whether this radiation is safe. The data is so overwhelming in this area.
Is that data simply not being publicized, or is it no longer being done, or is it being done by, people that are outside of industry? Why have we not heard about this?
Well, so back in the 1970s, when actually this was also pretty well established, there were questions by the funding agencies to continue to support this type of research because it was very clear the types of things that microwaves could do. So to be able to do a prospective study on a human population, meaning a controlled study where you're actually exposing them, it would have been completely unethical and in part impossible to get a review board to do to even approve that type of study. So even by that time, you would have to do an animal study, which there's been the largest studies done since then, which we could talk about, or you look at occupational health, where people are exposed in the workplace to microwaves. And there was actually a conference sponsored by WHO in 1972, I believe. It was a 3-day conference, and you can download this, and they looked at occupational health and the many other things. You can just look at the conclusions of that conference and the different mechanisms of how microwaves affect living systems, cells, DNA, and models that were developed and how microwaves affect biological systems. Very different than X-rays, which is ionizing radiation. We're talking technically about non-ionizing, but the mechanisms are different. So really, since 1975, and even into maybe 1985, the Environmental Protection Agency published a large 300s of pages about the effects of microwaves. And then right after their study, they started to get defunded and the people retired. So I would say certainly since the 1980s, we don't have many experts in this area that require both a biological background and engineering background to conduct these studies. Partly because of defunding, retards of retirement, partly because of education. And this is all before the first cell phones came out in the 1990s. So we don't see the research funding going to that. We don't have the expertise. That's not to say that we don't have experts out there that could come on your program and reinforce and are directly doing research even to today. But I think we have plenty in the literature to have an open debate on this and understand how microwaves impact the human body and health, and not just human body, animals, and the environment.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell us a little bit, like you alluded to the fact that the mechanism is different from ionizing radiation. What is the mechanism? What's actually happening in the body when it's exposed to microwave radiation?
So with ionizing radiation, and a lot of people learn this early on, is with X-rays, it's believed that you have enough energy in the wave to knock an electron out of orbit from the atom. So you're creating a free radical, and free radicals we know cause damage. Mm-hmm. And that's how X-rays work. Well, it's true that microwaves don't have the same type of energy as X-rays, so they operate in a different way. One of the things that we know, and there are many different things we can get into, one of the things is it changes the molecular structure of the structure of the organisms or the cells, and also can damage DNA. Okay, so there's lots of studies, including the largest studies, that demonstrate this. So when you have something that changes the structure of something, like a red blood cell or a population of red blood cells, you know that can have an effect on health, right? Just as an example, sickle cell anemia is a disease where the red blood cell is misshapen, and that causes all kinds of problems, including oxygen delivery. So we know that structure is directly related to function. So if you change the molecular structure, you're going to have an impact on function. And you start changing the properties or damaging DNA, now you get mutagenic things that can happen, such as cancer and the development of other types of disease. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that your brain is especially sensitive, and I'm talking low-level microwaves, not far off to fields that we might be exposed to with our devices, or limits out there by regulation agencies, which vary from country to country dramatically. So then we got to ask, well, why does one country have much more stringent standards than another country, right? What are they going by that's different? So with the brain, your brain can become leaky with exposures to microwave radiation. So the blood-brain barrier, which is supposed to be a barrier that keeps things out of your brain from the vasculature, you start to see things that normally shouldn't get into the brain start to get into the brain. And there's been many rat studies in particular going back decades that looked into that. And with that particular mechanism, it seems to have a window where it's not necessarily the higher intensities. It seems to be a certain range, and this, of course, would be in a rat, where this effect is most pronounced. So this idea that more and higher intensity is always worse, which in general is generally true. You want to kind of minimize your exposure. But there are these windows that are interesting that we have to understand that low levels can have a significant biological effect. And just a couple other things. So what the regulation agencies here in the United States have focused on for a long time has been really one mechanism, essentially, for this argument, and that is related to heating. So if you're not doing enough heating of the tissue, then the microwaves can't do any damage. Okay. Mm-hmm. And typically, you know, I work in the area of imaging, so we know to develop a safe imaging modality. The FDA, for example, would want to demonstrate that you're not heating the tissue more than 1 degree Celsius. That's what they would consider safe. So, right. So as long as you're not heating, the regulation agencies seem to say it's okay, even though there are thousands of publications that not only demonstrate you don't need to heat to get a biological effect, but also that the pulse modulation aspect of it, so the pulsing is also more effective to the cells, impactful. And it's important to recognize that your cells, we should mention this also, your cells use electrical communication. And so the pulsations of electric fields in general, but especially microwaves, can affect that communication system if you're always being exposed to that. Okay, so these are all the different possible mechanisms. And I think most people are affected by these fields, but many people have protections in place. This is where you have to think of health as being kind of vectors, right? So if you have a good diet and you're doing other things that are otherwise healthy, you don't have a lot of stress, that can be kind of protective from the fields that you might get exposed to compared to somebody else that may have, for example, metal toxicity, right? And if you have higher levels of metal in your brain or your body, those little metal particles will act like tiny little antennas and actually amplify the fields from outside electrical pollution or what have you. And
sure.
So therefore, you can start to see why this may be why some people are more sensitive to these fields than other people as
Yeah,
one possible explanation.
Yeah, and you also mentioned if you're opening up the blood-brain barrier and things can get inside and there's toxins that are already circulating, then it's more likely that those are going to get into places they're not supposed to be as well. So as you go up in terms of frequency, my understanding is that on one hand, there it's more information and it's more therefore potentially toxic to the organism. But on the flip side, is it true that it's also more easily shieldable from like normal building materials, for example?
So the first thing I want to say is that at first I don't want to distinguish the higher frequencies from the lower frequencies, because I think you can make a good argument that the 4G frequencies, especially today for most people, are more harmful. Now, if you got a new 5G cell tower that's actually transmitting at the higher frequencies, which is actually less common than you might think, then of course the addition of those frequencies could play a role. But what most people need to understand is that we're getting exposures from Bluetooth, our cell phone, Wi-Fi, we make smart meters. Okay, that's by far right now today where most people are getting their exposure. So that people need to think about different tips and recognize this as a potential health hazard and take precautions to protect themselves, especially if they're getting symptoms that may be consistent with microwave sickness, which is a term the military used a long time ago, or microwave pollution. And 4G, you know, and we just said, say, below 3.5 gigahertz, which even most of the towers, those frequencies that are being transmitted, they will penetrate, as you said, much further in the air. I can go tens of miles, if not further. And actually go through concrete into your home. But as soon as it hits a water, like your body, it will start to attenuate. And anything below 3 gigahertz can go centimeters into your body. So you're talking about the wavelength on the order of organs, and then will be absorbed. So to me, that in terms of health today, those would be the main things that people want to think about. Now, one of the differences between 5G, yes, you're going to higher frequencies, and you're right, when you get up to millimeter waves, because that might be a term that you've heard, that's typically above about 30 gigahertz, because the wavelengths get down to about a millimeter. It's true that when those waves hit your body, it's almost entirely absorbed in your skin. So it might only penetrate about a millimeter or so, depending on the frequency, compared to, you know, penetrate centimeters. It does not go as far in the atmosphere, but if you have just air, you can get those frequencies to go pretty far. It's usually water, humidity in the air, or plants in front of your home that's in front of the tower. That's what will tend to block those types of energies, but it can go through concrete and other things. So that means there's a big question why we would need a 5G cell tower so close to our home. It's really not for better cell phone reception. I don't know anybody here in Tucson that claims they're getting better cell phone reception with all the towers like these that were installed recently.
Right.
So the other big distinction, one of the reasons when I learned about it and this became a hot topic and I started to educate people and get out there, is that the technologies we're using in our home every day, it's kind of mostly involuntary. I mean, it's voluntary, right? We're voluntarily using these devices. Maybe we don't know, and then we can learn and do things. When we talk about putting a cell tower or these devices right in front of our bedroom windows, which some of them are around Arizona, that becomes involuntary exposure 24/7. Nobody is really monitoring or regulating these. We can have somebody run around with a little tiny meter and get some idea at that moment in time what's going on, but there's really nobody monitoring or regulating these. And so given what I just said in terms of known health effects, we're kind of wondering why nobody is coming together and saying, well, if we really want this technology, we need to make sure it's safe. And it's not like we have to have it. I think we all have a choice. But we're kind of just letting others just push this on us, again, without informed consent about what this is all about, without a conversation. And I think that's just dangerous in general, not just for the 5G. We need to come together and have conversation, make sure we're directly involved in the in decision-making process, especially when it comes to public policy.
For sure. So backing up a little bit, it sounds to me, correct me if I'm wrong, that the idea of each generation gets added new frequencies because the older frequencies are possibly saturated and we want to add more stuff. Is that why we're going to 5G, 6G, 7G, or is it some other reason?
The main reason is to connect more devices and tools and things to a big data grid. It's related to the facial recognition. So a lot of people don't recognize we've got something like 2 billion surveillance cameras attached to a global internet and about 20 billion cameras overall. I think China has about close to a billion, not quite. But the United States has more cameras per person than any other country. Okay, and that's all about facial recognition, not necessarily the microwaves, but they all work in synergy. So it's really important to understand that all this technology is being built for big data and surveillance. China already has what I would consider smart cities or surveillance cities, and you can listen about them. There's been reports in NBC and Wall Street Journal like 5 years ago about how this is being used to monitor people for social crediting, for invasion of privacy. And those are plans to spread this to many, many countries, right? So there's a grid, an infrastructure grid being set up that works together that will impact every aspect of our lives. It's actually been planned for a very long time and actually proposed a long time ago, but they didn't quite have the technology to do this. And we're really not talking about it or recognizing what's going on. So while we can talk about the health effects of microwaves and the decisions we make, I think in some ways the what this is actually being used for and not having the conversation about privacy and surveillance is even maybe a more important conversation we need to have.
Absolutely. So the idea of this Internet of Things, does this really benefit the consumer, or is this just part of that infrastructure that you're describing primarily?
So in theory, these things can be very beneficial, right? And let's say from a healthcare perspective, if you're able to use all the information available about a body or a person and all the different metrics, the electrophysiology, the temperature mapping, the being able to estimate immune systems remotely across populations, et cetera, you feed that into a computer because AI and machine learning is a big part of this. You get so much data, you can't have somebody just like making a decision.
Of
This is
course.
connecting things to an artificial intelligence grid, which is already established by the big companies. Now they're just feeding information to figure out how to use it. That information in turn could be used to better diagnose and treat something. However, it can also be used for malintent, just like any other technologies. And the way it's being used in China, I think if most people look into it, would probably be not something that we would appreciate here. And the way that people are being surveilled, there are places in China where you jaywalk and it immediately catches you and it puts your picture on a big screen on a building and you're immediately cited and it's automatically taken out of your bank account. These are things that are already happening. So it's part of social crediting and social engineering. So this is why we have to have the conversation. We have to make sure we're directly involved in decision making. And right now, for the last many years, especially since 5G was introduced almost 10 years ago by the FCC, there really hasn't been an open conversation. It's been more about marketing and industry and advertising and making people think it's about upgrading your cell phone, which really has very little to do with what this technology is about. And it's far more mature than most people realize.
So along those lines, in Tucson especially, what did the rollout actually look like? Like, at what point were we all exposed? Because I think it started in 2020, right?
Well, they actually started to install this this what we call 5G cell towers, which are smaller in height than the really large macro towers that have been around since the 90s. That really started, I would say, maybe 2018, 2019, starting around the university, and then neighborhoods around the university. But it really accelerated by like around February, March 2020. So as things started to get shut down, these things across the country, maybe even across the world, but across the country were prioritized. And in Tucson in particular, there was a dramatic increase in the rollout. A lot of people tried to slow things down and even have a moratorium placed here in the city of Tucson because we still do not have a protective ordinance. It hasn't really been updated. We recognize that. And just like other cities, people were proactive saying we need a moratorium. We need to update the local ordinance and make sure we're getting standoff distances between towers and homes and schools, like many other places, including in Arizona, but certainly across the country. There are many things you can do to make it protective, to make it more difficult for industry. But unfortunately, there's a lot of misinformation that's gone to attorneys, city attorneys, as down to the city council members and mayors, that they're being fed incorrect information about the laws, about oversight, about who really has control. And the bottom line is our cities and towns are the ones directly responsible for approving and denying permits. Okay. So you really have to know the law and you have to know who in the city is involved in that process. But what we found very early on, and we had an early letter in June 2020 for had a neurosurgeon and a couple professors said we had 13-page letter. I'm happy to share that with you, saying these are all the reasons we need to put a little pause on this and talk about improving the ordinance. And not only did we not get even a response to that or a follow-up letter, it took months till we even could get any communication. This was things were being shut down and remote, right? And things were always, there was always a barrier here in Tucson to have that conversation, to get people at the table, to make the thing. So it's not like there was a debate one way or the other. We couldn't meet, we couldn't have an open conversation.
Worse.
And we didn't really know when, how to, what the tools were to force action, even though we had many, many people ultimately were involved and in some ways still are. But how do you deal with a local government that will not work with people and represent the people, listen carefully to people, respond to documents that are done in writing? Those are questions we all have to have. And in here in Tucson, it's bad. Because Tucson started early, and there's lots of evidence that Tucson has been slated to be a smart city or 15-minute city. There's plenty of evidence going back 10 years on websites and things, and it's been promoted actually openly. That might be one of the reasons Tucson started early compared to other cities. But other cities that in Arizona that are under the same state laws started to learn very quickly what was going on, but they were able to get in before the towers went up. And that's before the liability started, right? And even today, they've been able to stop, go down to their city government, and when the towers proposed and make their arguments, then they know their talking points and be able to stop towers. Fountain Hills, Arizona, effectively has a moratorium in place. They use the same strategies that we did in Tucson. And we're able to get to the city council and mayor, and they got some really smart people there that are right in the face of their city council members and got them to vote properly and bring in the top telecom attorney in the country to consult and work with them to work on a better ordinance. And in the meantime, they have a pause. They don't have these towers up. So a lot of people don't know what's going on, but this is so important that even though Tucson had this happen, and it seems like it's slowed down now, but we have over 500 of these, what's called small, but they're only small in height, not in power, cell towers all over Tucson, some close to schools and homes and residences. And we talked about the privacy and the health, but another easy one that people want to know is that from many studies, when a cell tower goes in a neighborhood near a home, those properties devalue
Makes sense.
in price on average about 20%. And in
Sure.
California,
Wow.
you have to put, if you're going to sell your home, you have to declare that a
Crazy.
cell tower is either there or being proposed, reserved for that location. And the Housing and Urban Development referred to a cell tower as a hazard,
Sure.
So these are all like common sense things. So if somebody, without your consent or approval, or you aren't, and put a cell tower in front of your home and devalue your property, who is paying for that
Right.
loss? It
Yeah,
doesn't
I
make
know.
sense, right?
Absolutely.
So these are the things happening all over the country. People in different towns are pushing back in different ways. Some more successful than others. But this is something we should all be coming together on, not waiting till we get a notice on our door saying that we're starting to put a cell tower in, on your sidewalk tomorrow. That's not like the time to figure out when to
What
get involved.
to do. No, absolutely. Okay, so I'll come back to kind of like the public discourse discussion, but from an individual standpoint, you alluded earlier to the fact that our main exposures are the devices that we control. So for devices that have 5G capability in them, whether it's the phone or the TV or the smart or the smart meter or anything else, well, how do people protect themselves from the things that they actually do have control over? What would you recommend people start with?
So yeah, it's a general principle for any of the microwave frequencies, but since really most people are being exposed to something less than 3 gigahertz, because that's their Wi-Fi,
Right.
and if you hear 5G on your Wi-Fi, that really is 5 gigahertz. It's not the same thing as 5G. It's another
Oh,
confusing thing.
interesting.
So, but
Okay.
it's just one frequency on your router, and it happens to be a 5G frequency, but it's not
It's
what
not
we're
the
really
same
talking
thing.
about here.
Okay, got it.
Most frequencies are Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, cell phones. These are all still the 4G frequencies, so that's really what we want to protect ourselves from. And the first thing is, most Americans today are sick, they have chronic diseases, etc. But you really want to consider what your exposure levels are. And you can get a little portable meter you can find to give you an idea and identify. Of course, if you're sleeping next to a smart meter, you need to then pay more attention to that and get that assessed. If you're sleeping in the same room with a Wi-Fi, you can just have it turn off when
Sure.
you're at night and have it come back on in the morning. A lot of people can completely wire their homes. It's fairly easy to do that and get rid of your Wi-Fi if you want. I have Wi-Fi, just turn it off at night, and you can get faster internet that way. And then, you want to be smart. You don't want to put your phone on your pillow when you're sleeping on your head. That's not a good idea, because where you're sleeping, you might be in the same general spot for 8 hours. So you want to pay special attention to the room where you're sleeping, so from that exposure. So keep things in airplane mode, keep things away from your body. I mean, technically, the laptops and the phones in their manuals say that you're not supposed to ever put them up right up against your body, because you can increase the exposure standards. And so it's right in there. So we know that. And before, the older cell phones, like the Blackberries, the manual would say it's supposed to be 25 millimeters away from your body at all time. An inch away, that means you can't even hold your phone technically, right? The newer ones, it might be 10 millimeters. I don't know, 5 millimeters, depends on the phone. So standoff distance, being able to assess your exposure. So if you don't want to do it yourself, there are people locally. I think Safe Tech Tucson is a website you can look up, and they can have somebody come to your home and do an evaluation and give you suggestions and tips. And there are individuals trained in this, RF engineers. There's people that can actually do this, in Tucson and around Arizona. You can find, I think there's some a profession called a building biologist. You can look that up, which is a broader term for finding people specifically in this area. Other tips, just generally, like in your car, because your car is a metal shield, so microwaves will tend to bounce around inside the car, and it enhances the exposure. Often you will need a stronger signal coming from your phone and the tower, because it's got to go through the metal. So some people, especially, again, if you have symptoms, that's where you want to pay closer attention. Some people may feel fine, and you still may be affected by it, but not notice, and you might just get lazy and not pay attention to it. But it's just important to be aware of what the facts are and where you're going to get the exposures. So yeah, smart meters are a big one. You got to know if you have them and how close you are. And you are ways you can opt out and go back to get an analog meter, or the in case of Tucson Electric Power, they may charge a fee, et cetera, which you might or might not be able to argue with, et cetera. What are other things that some people say? I know that some people get into shielding there's special paints, and that gets into a much more complicated situation. And some people have benefited from that, but it is tricky. You really do need to hire a professional if you're going to do that.
Right.
And you and that can be used to shield microwaves coming from outside your home, if you have a situation like that. But it's not just intensity, right? We didn't mention this. So intensity, the amount of energy, the amplitude of the microwaves is one of the factors. But the others are dose. So how much exposure you get over time, which is not really recognized by the regulation agencies. It's like 1 minute or 5 years is considered equivalent to some of the regulation standards. And then the third thing is the pulsations, okay? And the type of pulsations, the different kinds of pulsations can get different effects. We're not talking about that today, but this is also, you can get all kinds of different effects based on the different kinds of pulsing you can do. And a lot of people don't realize this because it relates to some of the imaging that we do, but you can use pulses of microwaves that will generate sound that you can hear. This is called the microwave auditory effect. This has been known actually since the first radar went up 100 years ago or longer, but it's been well published and documented. There are books on this called the microwave auditory effect, patents on this. At relatively low levels, if you're in a quiet environment, you can actually hear pulses of microwaves. Now, we use that to create ultrasound, which are higher frequency sounds that we detect, and then we can make an image, an ultrasound image, from those sounds that come back. But the image is related to the absorption of the microwave that went in. So the contrast is a little bit different. That's how I'm familiar with it. And that's called thermoacoustic imaging. And the mechanism and the effect that's been studied is the thermoacoustic effect. So these are low level effects, doesn't require thermal, like a lot of heating. In fact, it could be within the standards that we use today that can create clicks, noise. Even this technology can be used to put voices. This is called voice-to-skull technology, which you can look up using pulses and microwaves. So this is, gets into a whole another field of beyond just health effects, but of directly affecting creating physical effects that can be perceived beyond just what we think is invisible kind of energy.
Sure. Yeah. Wow. That's so dystopian. It's all the various things they can do these days are incredible. So you kind of alluded to the fact that the choices that people can make to minimize their exposure has to do with your proximity to the source, right? So it typically the exposure drops off exponentially with distance. Is that about right? Yeah.
Yes and no. So with the typical kind of things like the macro towers, they tend to be antennas that where the intensity drops off in distance, typically like an R squared. So the square of the distance. Okay.
Right.
However, when you start to get to the higher frequencies and you get to microwave arrays that have multiple elements, not just one big block of an antenna that sends out omnidirectional in many different directions, you can now have antennas that are much more directional. And this is how we're 5G and 4G ultimately can work together in synergy, where you have the 4G that's going in all directions, monitoring things continuously. And then the 5G can focus in on a certain area. You can actually have a fanning or a scanning beam, a narrower beam, not exactly a laser, although there are such things as masers, which are lasers that are microwave frequencies. But they can be much more narrow beams and directed that will not fall off the same way. Now, if you have a very big array, and this isn't a typical thing you would see for communications that we're talking about, but in military, you could have a large array of microwaves and actually focus a beam to a tiny spot where you would get much more energy at a distance. And you would do that using time delays on the elements and be able to electronically steer a microwave beam in different locations. So we do this with ultrasound all the time. That's how ultrasound works, where we're steering sound. Ultrasound, that's how you make an ultrasound image with a linear array in the hospital. You're electronically steering by changing the delays on the elements, and you can focus an ultrasound beam in the body, right? And actually create an image. You can do this in principle with microwaves, but the key is to understand that, yes, most of the things will drop off with distance, but when you get to the higher frequencies, some antennas can be much more directional, and I would say maybe intended to be that way because they're being used together with the 4Gs, okay?
That makes See. Okay. So is it based on what you're describing? I have a picture in my head of, okay, so you've got the 4G that's kind of going omnidirectional, as you said, and then the 5G might be going this way, but your house is right here. I mean, is it possible for you to be close to it and have it not affect you because it's directing someplace else for the beam, or did I misunderstand you?
So 4G would tend to be omnidirectional because those poles might have things coming from different sides, so they can technically radiate in, let's just say, large fan beams. Okay. But depending on the type of antenna within that range, if it was a 5G antenna, you could direct a beam within that range. Now, these towers will have many antennas on them. It's not just one. So they're facing different directions. They all we can use together in synergy. So really the idea is to cover the entire spectrum, the entire field everywhere, and monitor everything. That's what we're talking about, monitoring everything. So it's many antennas, many poles, and not just the poles. It's the things on the street. It's the street lights. It's the walls. I mean, there are things that can be camouflaged right now. You can look these up. We built it into walls, into churches. You wouldn't even know there's an antenna there. That's called stealth technology. And some places want to conceal the towers because it looks nicer. Some people want to know that it's there, right? So there are certain laws related to concealment versus that. So I only say that cell towers or even our devices as being symbols or symbolic of a much bigger picture of how this is worked. But the goal is to monitor everything, everywhere, every tree in the forest is part of what this is about. And Bill Gates, Microsoft has software and programs to monitor trees in the forest and know what their health is, right? So when we say everything, we really mean everything.
Okay, so how do people find out if there's already a cell phone tower or multiple cell phone towers near them? Is there a quick and easy resource for that?
Yeah, so there are some websites. Let me see. For Tucson, I would go to Safe Tech Tucson because they'll have links, safetechtucson.com. And I know people that run that site. Let me see if I have. I think there's antennas. Is it antennas.com? I'd have to look specifically at the websites. But for Tucson, there is a specific website on the city of Tucson that will show a grid. You got to kind of play with the icons a little bit, but I think there's instructions on Safe Tech Tucson, and you can actually see where these 5G cell towers, the ones that are reserved that haven't been put in may come in the future. Maybe they show macro towers, I don't know. And there are multiple different sites. However, you can't assume that those are 100% reliable because there's no requirements right now to for this. This is a big thing. We can demand these things, so they may be slightly inaccurate or miss things. I don't know why it is this way, but it is. But I think at least for Tucson, there is a map where you can monitor not just the ones that are there but also the ones being reserved, and hopefully that is accurate. And I can send you later what the address is for
Perfect.
looking at it.
And I'll make sure I put that in the show notes. So for people who want to get involved and try to prevent this from going further, where do we start? What do we do?
That's a good question. A lot of people have been involved, so to speak, because after we originally wrote letters, we eventually turned to using notices and affidavits, which are a little bit more formal and appropriate, kind of like notices of liability. But notices just warning the people directly responsible, which we believe are the city council and mayor, because there are elected representatives and they are directly responsible for approving, denying permits. And Pima County Board of Supervisors also oversees some of the cell towers, a much smaller percent. We focus more on the city of Tucson just because they're responsible for most of the towers. And so in that community, actually across the country, we had close to 2,000 people send notices electronically to the city council and mayor of what the laws are, what the things are supposed to be doing, what they're not doing, warning them that this is their responsibility and that there are consequences for their action, etc. And this went on for months. And since didn't get any response, nothing changed. People turned to affidavits, which is a stronger form of a notice, saying, okay, now we're done. You're causing harm. Now it needs to stop immediately, right? And over 520 people had their affidavit served to the city council and mayor in 2022, 2023.
Wow.
And an affidavit is a testimony. It's giving testimony evidence. It's a sworn statement with penalty of perjury. So the people putting those affidavits and signing that are doing that with penalty of perjury. And they're demanding that they get a response within 72 hours, I believe, or that you acknowledge everything in there that's true. And you have to respond with your own affidavit, a sworn statement, right? The problem is they really can't respond to these because they're accurate. So they just chose to ignore them. And we've talked to some of them since. They says, oh, those things aren't worth the paper they're printed on. I mean, we have them on actually literally saying this. But this is our city council mayor. Now, the truth is that they're ignorant. They don't know what the laws are. They don't know who they're supposed to be representing. And we the people, are not doing our responsibility, our derelict duties to educate and inform early on of what this is. So what I've learned, and even though people would sign these documents, they kind of just conceded because, well, we asked, we did what we could, but we don't know what else to do, right? So people just kind of went back, but these documents are still sitting there. We still have the problem. So the first thing is people need to study this, research this, get people together, get educated on this, whether it's taking action to help Tucson, and to think about what the future of Tucson is, or to help their own health. Or maybe somebody lost property value and they need to figure out what can I do about this and who's responsible. We need to first start a conversation about these kinds of things, about informed consent, so we can then have the information and knowledge and power to go to somebody else, like our local government or the next person or our candidates or whoever, and make sure they're fully up to speed on what the laws are. And we have these debates and arguments because it's not an easy topic, and we need to bring people with different perspectives. But we don't have healthy civil discourse anymore. So I just think if anybody out there can help build platforms for this discourse to bring people together, and they don't have to be necessarily like-minded, they can have different points of view, but are willing to want to have a conversation, to learn something, to figure out how we can work together to do things better. So I'm not saying there's any specific action items because in terms of all the process, in terms of documentation, and I can share, anybody can go and read these documents, the four notice, different notices in the affidavit, and you can even serve those. But until I think happens what I just said, and that we and we until we realize that we the people have the power, and these are public servants, and they have to listen to us and pay attention to us, and they're not doing that. Until we recognize that, I don't think we can change anything. So it is more about us right now. It doesn't, I don't think it takes thousands of people. It may only take dozens at most, but they have to really understand what's going on, know the talking points, have the right attitude. And it can be as few as that many number of people that can actually start changing this. Whether it's Tucson, I mean, the cities across the country are involved in this in different
Oh,
ways and different
yeah,
magnitudes.
absolutely. That makes sense. What have I not asked you that you want to make sure you leave with our audience?
So I think what I just said last is most important. I see 5G as this topic, because when I got into it, I was just bringing my expertise because I have worked with microwaves and in defense and medical research, and I've had to do a lot of research in the publications, and I never realized how much there was on this specific topic, but when I got into it was like, my God, I never realized this. And I know other scientists that have figured that out as well. But I think it's more symbolic, like how are we allowing this to take place and either not aware of it or acting like there's nothing we can do. We just kind of like gave up, right? And that's generally the attitude that's that. And we need to change that mindset. We need to change it now, because it's one thing being exposed to microwaves. It's another to have a surveillance system being put into place, which we can talk, it's well documented what the plans are, and not just here, but across the world. We need to come together now. And so what I said last about thinking in terms of what I'm saying, not recognizing that this is a value system, and the longer we wait, the more difficult it is to that we're going to be able to do something. And once you have the infrastructure in place, it's going to be almost impossible to do something. And I'm just going to put another name out there again. I can give you a link. So Aman Jabi, I don't know if you've heard of him or his name, Aman Jabi. So he's done quite a few seminars, and he worked in Silicon Valley in the tech industry and has patents on the phones that we use today related to facial recognition and the camera stuff. He's given a lot of presentations about the infrastructure that's being built, what it's being used for, and how we need to focus on our local communities to push back. Stating pretty much what I just said, you have to stop the infrastructure, and people aren't talking about it and knowing what's going on. It's the only way. Of course, you got to change your minds first and recognize it, but you cannot allow this infrastructure to continue to be pushed forward at a rapid pace, and very few people are talking about it. So he lives in Montana. I've talked to him a few times, but he's like the technology guy. So the facial, all this other stuff is the complement, and he's given some really good presentations and PowerPoint slides. I've used some of his stuff that will get you into more detail of how everything kind of works together from that perspective.
Gotcha. Okay. So I will find that information and I'll include that in the show notes. Where can people go who want to learn more about you?
So I generally just give my personal email. Obviously, I'm here just representing myself, not the university. Anybody can find my professional contacts by searching for me. But my personal email is rwitty, which is RWITTE, at protonmail.com. Okay,
Awesome.
protonmail.com. And I'm happy. And if people want to get a group together to talk about this topic or anything else, or form a group for a presentation or discussion, I'm always open to that, interested in meeting new people. So.
Awesome. Well, I will link to that in the show notes as well. And thank you, Dr. Whitty. This has been very enlightening.
Absolutely. I hope your audience enjoys and gets something out of the information.
Thank you so much.
Are you looking for a holistically minded healthcare practitioner who truly treats root cause rather than symptom suppression? Unfortunately, even in the alternative healing professions, this isn't a given. That's why I've created wholehealthdoctor.com, a resource to help connect patients to healthcare practitioners in their area who share a root cause philosophy. Alternatively, most of the practitioners listed also practice telehealth. So if there isn't anyone local to you, you can still find a great practitioner to help you regain optimal health. Go to wholehealthdoctor.com. That's wholehealthdr.com. Type in your location or just the specialty that you're looking for and find the practitioner who's right for you.
Thanks for listening to Christian Natural Health. This show is run by you, so please write in with topic and guest suggestions for future shows. For more great content, subscribe to Dr. Lauren's blog at www.drlaurendeville.com or follow her on Facebook or Twitter at Dr. Lauren Deville. If you enjoyed the show, don't forget to share it with your friends and give us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It really helps us to stand out so other people can discover great content as well. Have a great week and God bless you.
Have you ever felt conflict between your faith and feelings? If so, you're not alone. My name's Carly Mercouillier. I'm a licensed therapist and the host of the Therapy and Theology podcast, where we explore popular topics and questions related to faith, feelings, and spiritual formation. I want to invite you to join me every Thursday as we fearlessly name the complexities of our reality, grow in the awareness of who we are, and rediscover the power and purpose of our unique stories through the lens of the gospel. Subscribe today at lifeaudio.com.